Sometimes after the choir sings, I think I can just sit down and say amen. I mean, just wonderful. Thank you so much for that. I know it takes so much hard work. But hi, everyone. It is just good to be back with you. So if you don't know, my wife's family is from Minnesota. And so each winter, really around Christmas time, we take the girls up and go and for a week a visit. Now, that was especially exciting because my girls, living, you know, their entire lives in Tampa, didn't get to see much snow. And so we'd go up to Rochester, Minnesota, and they would just have tons and tons of the stuff, and we enjoyed it each and every year. Well, this one particular year, we wanted to take them to a lake that was really unique. And it's really unique because this lake was a man-made lake. It was a heated lake, which meant that it attracted tons and tons of Canadian geese. Now, I'm not talking just a couple or just a few, but these giant, giant kind of swarms of Canadian geese. Well, so we showed up one day thinking this would be a lot of fun to show the girls and see how they're all around this heated lake. And we get there and we discover that they're all in the parking lot. In fact, I think we have a picture of what that looks like. Well, so we still wanted to show the girls, and so we pulled into the parking lot and tried to get close so that they could look out their windows and see all of these geese. And as we did that, the geese must have thought we had food because they came and completely surrounded the car to the point where we couldn't back up without thinking we might hit one of these poor little geese. And so we're kind of stuck in this parking lot, surrounded by all of these Canadian geese. And so Sarah's mom and Sarah and myself begin to talk and strategize, thinking, what do we do to get out of this little predicament that we're in? It was at that moment they kind of looked at me. And they said, we have an idea. And I said, I don't want to hear your idea. And they said, we think you should get out of the car and scare them away so that we can go drive through the parking lot and make it out of here. I said, that's not a good idea. But I didn't have a better idea, so I said, all right, that's fine. So I got on my winter coat, because it's Minnesota, it's very, very cold up there. I grabbed my coffee, because again, it's very, very cold, and if I'm going to be out there, I want to keep warm. And I get out of the car, and I don't think I made it six steps before these aggressive, honking Canadian geese just came right up to me. Now, I think they thought that my coffee was food. I mean, that was mistake number one, but I retreated very quickly back to the car. I said, what's plan B? Plan A didn't work. What's plan B? And they said, listen, David, you can't be scared of the geese. You need to make them scared of you. And so drop your coffee and go try it again. I said, all right, I can do this. I'm the human here. I'm not the geese. I can make them scared of me. So I put my coffee back down. I make sure that my jacket is zipped up nice and tight, and I walk out again. And I think, how am I supposed to be aggressive with all these geese around? I said, I got it. I'll just walk like this, and I'll just walk like this, and then they'll get out of the way. And I started walking like this, and they started parting away from me a little bit. I thought, it's working. This is great. And so I decided to just keep my eyes focused on the edge of the parking lot where I couldn't see geese anymore, and just walk like this, all the way there, hoping that then the car would follow me once the geese all parted directions. Well, I gotta tell you, I'm terrified when I get to about the middle of the track, but I'm not looking left or right. I'm just staring where there's no more geese and walking and hoping that the car is right behind me as I go. I gotta tell you, I made it. I made it all the way to the end, and I was excited and I was relieved, and I turned around and the car had not moved an inch. Not an inch. Apparently, the geese parted enough for me to get through, not enough for a whole vehicle to get through. So I had to go turn around, walk back through all of the geese, and then thankfully I was able to shoo enough away from behind the vehicle that they could then back themselves out of the parking lot. But you know what? I really kind of enjoyed that experience. I mean, it made my heart beat a little bit faster. It made me feel like I was on a mini adventure in life. And how often do you have those? I mean, life can be so much of routines. This is what you do. I wake up. I know what every day pretty much holds. But when's the last time you had a bit of a mini adventure in your life? One of those things where you talked with your family and friends afterwards saying, remember that time. Remember that time we were surrounded by geese. Remember how that felt like. In fact, when's the last time in your life that something made you feel very exhilarated, like you were alive and having so much fun in that moment? You got that image of what that might have been in your life? Well, then let me ask you a slightly different question. When was the last time something about your faith in God made you feel exhilarated? Well, that's what I want to wonder about today, because really, faith should be about the most exciting part of your life. I mean, think about this. Every day, there's a possibility that God is going to use you in some profoundly meaningful way. I mean, every day, that is a possibility. God is not something we just read about in the Bible. God is not something we just sing about on Sunday mornings. No, God is active in the world, and God is active in our worlds as well, which means that every day, God might use your life in a profoundly meaningful way. And so faith should be just about one of the most exciting parts of our life. And so I have an opening premise for this sermon, and we'll get it on the screen, but it's this. God asks us to live a life of faithful adventure. Now let me break that down for just a second for you. Faithful adventure, show you what that means. Life should be faithful because we're following God's direction. We're not just going our own way. You're not blazing your own trail. No, you're following God. And so life is faithful. But it's an adventure because you're taking bold, risky steps out in your faith for something God is asking or calling you to do. Now, we don't pair those words together very often, do we? Faithful and adventure. I mean, sometimes we think of faith and we think that faith is boring. Or we think that, oh, faith is just something I do when I get up on a Sunday morning. It's part of my ritual, part of my routine. And adventure can seem rare. That's something that you just do on vacations. That's not day-to-day life. But what if you combine those two things, faithful, adventure? How would that change how you see each and every day that you live? Well, I've got one idea of how that would change. If you viewed your life as a faithful adventure, then you would wake up every morning with a sense of anticipation of what God might do that day. And if we're being honest, and if I'm being honest, I wake up most mornings thinking, what time is it? The girls woke up at 5 again? Ah, this is not right. Or maybe you wake up going, okay, here's my to-do list. I've got my schedule. What am I going to start with first? But what if we woke up with a sense of anticipation, saying, what is God going to do today? What is God going to do in my life today? Well, I recognize that this is not something that comes naturally to us. It's something we need to learn how to do. And so that's why we have the story of the scripture we do today. It's a story that's going to teach us how to live lives of faithful adventure. Now, it's one that you're probably familiar with. It's one of my favorites. And so I want to give you a little bit of a context as we learn what this story means for us and how to live these type of lives. So the disciples, at this point, had just seen Jesus feed 5,000 people. You remember that story? The fishes and loaves, Jesus takes a little bit and then feeds a lot of people. So that miracle directly precedes what we are about to read. So if you're thinking of the disciples, they still have bellies full of food, you know, they probably still taste a little bit of the fish or the loaves. That's how recent this was. And then our story picks up. We're in verse 22. Immediately then, he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And so there are all these crowds gathered, all these people who he just fed. He did a huge miracle for them. And Jesus tells his disciples, you go in the boat and I'm going to go dismiss all of these crowds. And so they do. They go to the boat. And in verse 23, and after he had dismissed the crowds, Jesus, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, Jesus came walking towards them on the sea. Okay, let's pause for a second and just acknowledge that most of us in this room know this story extremely well. And because of that, it can be hard to really experience it again for the first time. But it would be sad to lose the impact of this story because of our familiarity with the story. And so I'm going to ask you to immerse yourself once again in this story. Pretend that you were one of the disciples. Put yourself on that boat. what would it feel like to be on a boat? Well, many of you, I mean, we live close to Lake Norman, so you probably fairly recently were on a boat. What's it feel like when you're on one of those? You're a little bit unsteady. Now, this is not a large boat. It's not a yacht. This is a fishing boat that all the disciples are in. And we're told that they're being battered by the waves. A bit of a storm has moved in. And not only are they being battered by waves, and imagine what that must have felt like, but we're told that the wind is so strong against them that they can't even paddle their way back to safety. They can't make it to shore. And not only that, but we're told that all of this is happening in the middle of the night. So put yourself in that story, in the middle of a lake, in the middle of a storm, in the middle of the night. What must have that felt like? Well, it's in that moment that Jesus approaches them on the water. Now, wouldn't you think that that would be a moment of celebration? I mean, if they see Jesus coming on the water, they've seen Jesus calm a storm before. So wouldn't you think that they would see Jesus and experience immediate relief? And yet, that's not their reaction, not when they see Jesus. Instead, our story tells us this, verse 26. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Now, wouldn't that be a fitting ending to this story? I mean, how often in the Bible is Jesus doing a miracle, everybody's amazed, and the story ends? I mean, that happened just before this story. Jesus feeds 5,000 people, everybody's amazed, and the story ends. So once you think that the disciples being battered by waves in the middle of a storm see Jesus approach and Jesus says, "It's me, I'm not a ghost, do not be afraid," once you think that they would see Jesus and be amazed and the story would just end at that moment. And yet, that is not how our story ends, because one of the disciples decides to do something very unusual, very out of the ordinary. I'm curious what was going through his mind when he said these words in verse 28. But Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." What a striking moment. I mean, Peter wants to get involved in the story. There's still waves splashing around. The wind is still there. It's still in the middle of the night. But Peter sees Jesus and says, "Jesus, if that is you, if that's really you that I'm seeing through all these waves, command me to come to you on the water." I wonder why Peter said that. Why did Peter get out of the boat? I mean, if you're putting yourself in this story, and if you put yourself in Peter's shoes, what would encourage you to get out of the boat? You might say nothing. Nothing would compel me in that circumstance to get out of the boat. So why did Peter say what he said? Well, I've got a hunch, and I think it's because Peter was wondering, what is my faith really capable of? Like, what is my faith in God? What is my partnership with Jesus? I mean, he'd been following Jesus around for some time now. I bet he was wondering, what is my faith really capable of? Well, Peter asked Jesus, "If it's you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus in verse 29 simply says one word, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came towards Jesus. What is faith really capable of? I bet you've wondered that at some point in your life as well. I mean, remember our opening premise. God calls us to a life of faithful adventure. Peter, in that moment, definitely was on a faithful adventure. He wanted to know what is really possible with God. And so, Jesus, if that is you, command me to come to you on the water. As I was putting myself in this story, I thought of the many things that would hold me back from doing that. I mean, think about it. 11 disciples are still in the boat. 11 disciples like the firm feeling of the wood underneath their feet, and they're not ready to go and step out onto what seems like this nothingness that they don't know how to experience. But Peter decides to take this step out in faith. But it made me wonder, what holds us back from answering that question when we say, what is my faith really capable of? Well, I came across a couple of ideas, and I wonder if these fit you. But the first one, and we'll get on the screen, is this. Things that limit faith, what about fear? Fear. And avoiding these big, risky steps out for God. I mean, you can probably go through your entire life never taking big risk in your faith. Always taking the safe approach, the safe route. And oftentimes we do that because of fear. Because we don't know what will happen if we truly take that step out in faith. It's the difference between wondering, what is God up to, and instead wondering, well, what might go wrong if I do this? Faith is often limited by our own internal fears that ask us not to move and not to take that step. The second one I thought of, complacency. This thinking that things will always be that way. I can't really change anything. It's the difference between looking at the world and saying, I'm just me. I'm just a small person. What can I really do to make an impact? And instead, faith encourages us to look at the world and say, how can I partner with God to make a meaningful difference in the world? Complacency just says, that's the way it is, and that's the way it's always going to be. Complacency urges us to not have a plan for how to grow in our faith or to trust God more. Complacency can limit our faith, can keep us in the boat. Or the last one I thought of would be this, small dreams. I mean, perhaps we have not allowed ourselves to truly dream about what is possible with God. And if we do not dream, we cannot then imagine what God wants to accomplish in our lives. There's a lot of things in our life that are going to ask us to stay in the boat, to stay where it feels safe, and to not take these bold, risky steps out in our faith towards God. But this is a story we read this morning where we're reminded that Peter walked on water. Peter chose to stretch his faith to the limits. That's what we see in this story. At this point in the story, he's an example of a disciple who puts 100% of his trust in God. And yet, Peter is human, isn't he? And we know, because we're humans, that it can be hard to sustain that level of trust in God over a long period of time. And so this is true in Peter's story as well. In this moment, he's walking on water. His eyes are focused on Jesus. The wind and the waves are all still around, but he doesn't see any of that. He sees Jesus, and he's taking steps towards him, and then something takes his eyes off of Jesus. We're told in verse 30, but when he noticed the strong wind, see, the wind was there the whole time, right? But when he noticed it, when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me! And Jesus immediately reached out his hand, caught him, saying to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. So what changed with Peter? I mean, one moment he's living this faith adventure. He's putting his faith to the test, and he's walking on water towards Jesus. But then what changed? Well, he takes his eyes off of Jesus. He puts his eyes on the wind, and he gets frightened. And slowly fear starts to replace his faith. Sometimes the difference between sinking and walking on water is what your attention is on. That's what this story asks us to think about in our own lives. What are our eyes focused on? Are our eyes focused on our own worries and doubts? Are our eyes focused on our own stresses and things that might go wrong in the world? The story encourages us to put our eyes right on Jesus, to walk towards him each and every day of our lives, and to not take our eyes off of Jesus. There's this neat clip I'm going to show you in just a moment. I don't know about you, but one of my favorite movies has been the Lord of the Rings series. I know it's come out a while ago now, but I really like it, particularly because my birthday is 3 days after Christmas, and these came out around Christmas. And so every year during my birthday, I'd say, okay, family, we're going to go see the next one for 3 years in a row. It was a great experience. Well, there's this moment in the very first movie, if you've seen them or I'll refresh your memory, where there's two friends, Frodo and Sam, and they're going to go on an adventure. Their adventure is to go and save the world, right? They've got a ring. They're going to throw it into Mount Doom. And so they set off. And they leave their hometown. They leave the spot where they've grown up and spent their entire lives, right? And they go off on their adventure. But at one point, as they're walking off on their adventure, Sam stops. And Frodo, he keeps going, and he turns around and he goes, well, Sam, why did you stop? And what I want to show you in this clip is the reason Sam gives for stopping in that moment. Let's go ahead and play it.
This is it. This is what? If I take one more step, it'll be the farthest away from home I've ever been. Come on, Sam. Remember what Bilbo used to say? It's a dangerous business, Frodo.
Going out your door, you step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.
If I take one more step, it'll be the farthest away from home that I've ever been. That's a lot how faith can feel like sometimes. If I take one more step towards God, if I place this part of my life in God's hands, if I trust God a little bit more, well, it's going to be the most I've ever trusted God. And that can be a mixture of excitement and nervousness and fear, because it truly is stepping into the unknown. But what this story encourages us to do with Peter walking on water is identify those areas of our life that hold us back from that. Our fears, things that encourages us to be complacent, the small dreams we have in our world. It asks us to identify those things and then put them towards the side, keep our eyes focused on Jesus, and take that next step towards him in trust. Now that's going to be different for all of us. Everyone in this room, that step is going to be different. But what I encourage you to do today when you get home is to identify what that step might be in your life, whether that's in a relationship that which you have, whether that involves your finances, whether that involves a conversation that you really want to have but haven't. What is that next step in faith for you? And then recognize that in this faithful adventure of life that we live, that this could be the year that you learn to trust God on a whole new level. Amen.